You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. I'm Dave Hodges, along with my co-host, James White, and we will be flying co-pilot together for the balance of the hour, and we have a terrific show for you. You're not going to want to tune out. Stay tuned, because we've got some riveting information coming your way with a very special guest. And for the introduction of our special guest, let me throw it back over to Jim.
Thanks, Dave. We're delighted today to welcome Kurt Haskell to the show, former attorney and underwear bomber whistleblower. Kurt Haskell will investigate the most important stories of the day. After running a failed campaign for U.S. Congress in 2012, Kurt decided to leave the U.S. and relocate to Costa Rica, where each show shall be broadcast from. Kurt has a wide base of knowledge on matters from politics to law to false flag terror to expat living to government corruption. Kurt Haskell, thanks so much for joining us here on the Common Sense Show.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Well, great, Kurt. You know, I didn't realize, I think you were originally from, we'll give a little bit of background, but I think, weren't you from Michigan? Because I came from Michigan.
Right.
Don't you have Michigan roots?
Yeah. I grew up in Michigan, lived most of my life in Michigan. Sure did. All over. I was born in Pinconning, the Bay City area. But I lived all over. I went to school in Saginaw, and I went to law school in Lansing, and then I set up a law practice outside of Detroit and lived just outside Monroe for about 15 years before moving to Costa Rica.
Wow, that's quite a jump to Costa Rica. We can certainly get into that a little bit later and talk about the expat living. But, you know, Kurt, give us, for those out there that may be new to you or your work, why don't you, we kind of glossed over that in the intro, your underwear bomber whistleblower. Go, if you can, talk a little bit about that and go back, now you're a radio host, and that sort of kicked everything off for you. If you can, go back in time a little bit to that event, that incident, and where you've come from there, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. There's really a lot to it, and we could probably do a whole week of shows just on that, really. I'll try and give a real, real short version, but back on Christmas Day 2009, my wife and I were coming back from a safari in Africa, and we had a connecting flight through Amsterdam and then on to Detroit. And while we're waiting for our connecting flight in Amsterdam, we're playing cards at the gate, and I saw two men approach the counter. One was an Indian looking man in a suit, and one was a poor looking African kid, if you will, wearing just a t-shirt and jeans, no coat or anything, and it was the middle of winter. And the African guy spoke for him. I'm sorry, the Indian man spoke for the African kid, and he said, "This man needs to get on a flight, but he doesn't have a passport." And then the girl at the desk argued with him a bit, and then he said, "Well, he's from Sudan. We do this all the time." And then she got on her computer and picked up the phone, and she told them to go down the hallway and talk to a manager. And that's when I quit watching it and thinking he wouldn't get on our plane. But little did I know, he would get on our plane, and about 8 hours later, he would try and detonate a device while we were at 20,000 feet, starting our descent into Detroit. So I knew he did not show a passport or even have a passport when he boarded the so-called underwear bomber. That's who this African guy was. And the lines in Amsterdam were where you show your passport are also the security check lines. So I strongly suspect he did not go through security in any way, since he didn't have a passport either. So I gave this information to the FBI when we landed in Detroit, thinking I would help them catch the accomplice to this terror attack in Detroit. And little did I know, but they weren't very interested in what I had to say. And that started down a long road of me asking why weren't they interested in having me help them catch the accomplice to how this underwear bomber boarded our plane. You know, I was a practicing attorney then, and strange things were going on in the investigation that were not normal at all. So it led me on a 2,000-hour investigation that encompassed 2 years of my time. And I talked to other passengers. I went to nearly every court hearing. I talked to the defense helper attorney. He didn't come actual attorney, just a helper. Read everything published on it. You name it, I did it with this case. And my final conclusion, what it took me almost 2 years to figure out, was that the United States government gave the underwear bomber a device that they knew would not detonate. They pulled out the detonator before they gave it to him. They knew the device would cause a fire on the plane that would be put out with fire extinguishers and not detonate. And thereby, the U.S. government intentionally caused a terror attack knowing that the plane would not be detonated. And that's the real story of the underwear bomber, the very, very short version.
Kurt, was this your first go-around with everything that comes out of Washington? And that, I was going to ask you, was this your first go-around with everything in Washington that comes out of there can't be trusted, that they cross purposes?
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, let me catch you.
I had no idea any of this sort of thing went on back then at all. You know, I was just a regular guy living my life. And I was shocked because during my two-year investigation, I figured out that the government is not to be trusted. The press is not to be trusted. The press tried to ruin my reputation and destroy me, calling me a lunatic and all these sorts of things. And I was a practicing attorney then, and your reputation is everything when you're an attorney. So I took great offense to that. And of course, the trial was held in practice on a weekly basis, and the trial was a big sham. So, and then that destroyed my belief in the court system where I worked in, you know, in the city that I worked in all the time. So this was a real eye-opener for me. And to me, when I look back on anything in my past, I measure it by this event. Was it before this event or after? This is like a dividing line in my life. From when I was not awake to when I am now awake. So it's the defining moment in my life, I would say.
Look, Kurt, we're getting some really sketchy audio from you here. Our connection, I think, is not very good. We may try to dump the connection and get back in touch with you. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that, folks. Sometimes this happens during live radio. The connection wasn't very good with Kurt, so what we're going to try to do is he's in Costa Rica, so I can't imagine that his connection there is probably what we have here in the States.
Hello?
Anyway, Kurt, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Is that better?
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that is better. Kurt, okay. I was going to comment on what you just stated. You look at the 1993 mm-hmm. World Trade Center bombing, Shah Salam, where the FBI literally tried to set that guy up as well. Now, he kind of got wise to the situation and started recording their conversations. And when it was all over, he had two or three binders full of recordings with his attorney of the FBI literally trying to set him up for that 1993 failed World Trade Center bombing. If you remember, when they parked the trucks, the vans underneath the World Trade Center and tried to blow the columns out, and they tried to set him up for it. Did that come across any of your research? Did you look into that at all, or what's your comment on that?
No, you know, I haven't researched that one that much, just a cursory examination of it. really. I've kind of, you know, when this happened, I had no idea that any of these things took place. So I went back and researched some of them, like the Oklahoma City bombing and 9/11. I'm trying to think of some more I went back and looked on. Mostly, though, I paid attention to events going forward. You know, when it's easy for me to pick out the signs of these fake, or I hate to say fake because they're not totally fake, government-sponsored events that are not completely truthful. It's easy for me to pick them out now. So I pay very close when I see the signs of one happening, you know, and I follow it from the start. So it's more that that's the case, that I pay a lot closer attention to events going forward than I have gone back and looked at some in the past, although I did look at a few.
Well, I have to tell you, it would have been an eye-opening experience for me to go through what you went through firsthand. So you go through this experience, and then from there, how long did it take before you became a broadcaster and started unveiling all these nefarious plots?
Well, I haven't been a broadcaster that long. I was a co-host of my friend's show for the past year, and I've been doing my show now about 3 months, so not that long. Now, I was still running a busy law practice in Detroit up until April of 2014, and that's when I moved to Costa Rica. So I didn't have a lot of free time, and then I kind of wanted to get accumulated here in Costa Rica, and now I feel like I'm settled in fine where I can kind of do some things that I want to do. So, and, you know, after this happened, I spent about 2 years investigating it, and then immediately after that, I ran for United States Congress trying to make a difference. So, and then I spent about 10 months doing that. So that took all my time for the next 10 months. So I really didn't have a lot of free time, and then I was getting ready to move to Costa Rica and running the law office and that sort of thing. So I'm just getting to the point now where I feel I can dedicate the right amount of time into putting on a good show.
Well, Kurt, let me ask you, how do they view your show in Costa Rica? Do you get any interference from the authorities?
No, not at all. No. The police and government here are very relaxed. It's not like the U.S. at all. It's kind of a anything-goes type of attitude here. You stay out of my way, I'll stay out of your way. There are very few laws that are enforced. It's this kind of live and let live attitude. Very, very different than the U.S., completely opposite.
You know, I'm curious to know, I don't really know the gun laws. Is there like a Second Amendment in Costa Rica, or are people allowed to carry guns, or is it a gun-free zone? I have no idea.
No, you can have guns here, but you have to be a permanent resident here first. And that, to become a permanent resident takes about 3 years. Up until that time, you can have one rifle in your house. And then once you're a permanent resident, then you can have a handgun that you can carry. But it's the difference in attitude here, though, is really striking. People just don't care about guns here. It's not that, you know, there are strong restrictions on it. It's just the culture of how people are brought up here in Costa Rica is very peaceful, and they just don't care very much about guns.
What kind of American influence do we see in Costa Rica with regard to corporatocracy and so forth? I mean, are there politicians subject to the same pressures that ours are?
We don't have a lot of corporations here, really. It's mostly like mom and pop type stores. I mean, we have some, but, you know, it's not like they dominate the landscape like in the U.S. So, But do politicians have pressures here? Yeah, I mean, it's a poor country. So, you know, if a big corporation wants to move part of its business here to help Costa Rica, you know, they might feel their hands are tied to bend over backwards a little bit to make sure that happens.
You know, Kurt, we're coming here to the end of this first break. Before we go out, why don't you go ahead and give us out your websites and where people can hear your broadcast? You're on Talk Network. I think we're co broadcasters on Talk Network. Go ahead and give that out if you don't mind, Kurt.
Oh, sure. Well, my show is called Real Investigations. It airs Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Talk Network, and you can go to my Real Investigations Facebook page. That's where I put all the archive shows. And also, if anyone's interested, you can just add me on my own personal Facebook, too. And I just started videoing my shows, too, so I do have a YouTube page, too, but I just put it up, so there's only one show on there so far.
Okay, we'll be back after the break with Kurt Haskell here on the Common Sense Show. Please stick around after these brief messages.
Talking about America's decline, the liars that rule, the impending police state, the collapse of the dollar and the economy, or the loss of electricity due to an EMP? Well, it's just talk. A wise man does more. He prepares. Whatever the trigger or disaster, you cannot depend on your local grocer, the big box store, or any government handouts to feed your family. So reclaim your independence and food freedom by purchasing Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com. Numana Food Storage meals are individually wrapped and placed in a reusable bucket. Numana meals are delicious. Potato cheese casserole, beans and rice, pancakes, pasta primavera, habanero chili, and more. No MSG, no preservatives, no high fructose corn syrup, no GMOs. Nutritious food to feed your family, friends, and assembly at a very reasonable price. Under $2 a meal. So you can have a better shot at surviving the tough times. With a shelf life of 25 years, it's food insurance and food assurance. You'll need to add the fire in the water. Make the wise choice. Order Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com today. foodforliberty.com.
For this week's Ranger Gear Review, we are literally giving away folding credit card knives for one penny each. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and to take advantage of this offer, just go to freefoldingknife.com. That's freefoldingknife.com, and you'll get this folding credit card knife for just one penny. This isn't some gimmick. This is a real emergency-use folding credit card knife with a steel blade, very, very sharp, 65 millimeters in length on the blade, but it folds down like origami to the shape and size of a credit card. This makes it incredibly easy to carry in a pocket or a purse or the glove box of your car and have it ready for emergency use. Normally, these are sold for anywhere from $5 to $10, but right now at freefoldingknife.com, you can get one of these origami-style folding credit card knives for just a penny. Limit one per order, please. So take advantage of it right now at freefoldingknife.com.
Hey, do you have all the gold and silver you need just in case the currency goes dump? Well, the currency is going to go dump. If you go up to thecommonsenseshow.com, I wrote an article about that today. You can check it out after the show. And when you're also done reading the article, you're going to understand why I'm talking to you about Steve Quayle from Renaissance Precious Metals. Steve is the easiest guy to work with. He's a consultant. He's your friend. He'd be like your uncle. When I called him up and said, Steve, I'm really nervous about the money I got in the bank, he sat down with me and went through all my options, and I'm a satisfied customer. You can be, too. Call Steve tomorrow at 406-586-4842. Again, that's Steve Quayle, Renaissance Precious Metals, 406-586-4842. Our special guest is Kurt Haskell, who basically broke up an attempted, let's say, terrorist act on an American airplane. Whether or not the device would have gone off, I mean, we can debate that. But in my book, when I heard about this, I go, what a hero. And we're really honored to have him on the show. Jim wants to take this in a slightly different direction. So, Jim, let's let you start the cross-examination here. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Kurt's the one actually that does the examination, and your investigations, Kurt, have opened up, actually shocking news to me here recently. Another person that was a fellow broadcaster on the Talk Network, Rebecca Roth, who I'd interviewed a few times, a couple times actually, on the Liberty Brothers radio show. We come to find out, you know, we want to be, you know, last thing we need is more division in this movement, Kurt, as you well know. But I mean, when someone has the evidence, the goods on them like that, we have to point that stuff out. I mean, if we're people that go after truth and try to expose corruption, which I think is sort of that's the thread that runs, I think, you know, common thread that runs between all of us, that we want to get this corruption over with. When we see it within our own movement, I think we're sort of compelled to point it out. Why don't you go into that, Kurt, and tell us a little about the background on that.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I have a lot of fans and followers, and they like to send me different things to get my opinion. You know, a lot of people don't know what to believe anymore. So I started getting emails and contact request, and there people were sending me this video, Jim Fallon, asking if I thought she was a fraud or not. And I hadn't really even thought about it. I didn't know her that well. I've never talked to her. And
I didn't think much of it, but then it kept increasing, and more people were sending it to me. So I started looking into it, and I was finding some disturbing things. She didn't seem to be who she said she was. She had all kinds of aliases, and I could find no proof that she was a flight attendant. So, you know, and that's the basis of her claim being an expert in the field of 9/11. So initially, I started looking into trying to figure out whether she was a flight attendant and who she was exactly, because Fetzer had uncovered some infomercials where this Monica Gaynor person had the exact same voice as Rebecca Ross. So he said they were the same person and this was an alias of hers, and essentially she was a snake oil salesman, if you will. So I started uncovering some things. And of course, she had a show on the same network I did, and you do, Talk Network. So I brought these things to the attention of Mike Adams, the owner of Talk Network. And Mike said, I'll look at them and, you know, I'll decide what I'm going to do the next day. And the next day, he said, she's off the network after he looked at what I had presented him with. So then, you know, I hadn't gone public with any of my information yet, because I didn't want to do that against someone on Talk Network. So, you know, I kept digging and digging, finding these different aliases, you know. Pete Santilli on Talk Network said, well, look, I'm just going to ask her for one picture of herself as a flight attendant. If she can show it, that's good enough for me. And I said, well, okay, whatever. And, you know, I heard the phone call. And Pete asked for that, and basically she told him, F off, I don't owe you anything, and hung up on him. Now, I thought that was real strange, because if someone wanted a picture of me as an attorney, I would just give it to them. Would be no big deal at all. I wouldn't even think twice of it. So, and then later, I think it was later that day or maybe the next day, another person at Talk Network called her, and I could hear this call. It was on speakerphone, and this person decided to confront her with a name. The name is Becky Folger. And this was a name we were given. I'll tell you how we were given this name. We had a source tell us that this person was Rebecca Roth. And the story was Rebecca Roth approached our source at a 9/11 meetup in Dallas and said, hi, I'm the author Rebecca Roth, and my real name is Becky Folger, and I live here outside of Dallas. So pretty strong evidence here, and the source is credible. So we had pretty strong evidence that she was really this Becky Folger. So this person from Talk Network confronted her with this name, and she paused for about 10 seconds, not saying anything, stunned that this name would be brought up to her. And later in the call, she said something like, now you've put my kids and grandkids in danger by bringing this name out. So that was more confirmation to us that we're all on the right track, that she was using this name as another alias. So I started digging more, and I found a picture of a realtor in Washington State that had the same picture as Monica Gaynor, the other alias from the essential oils infomercials. So now we had her tied to another name. The name was Corianne Ashley. That was tied to the realtor picture. So, you know, we're adding up multiple aliases here. And I started digging into Corianne Ashley, and I found that Corianne Ashley had a different name before. She legally changed her name from Mary McQuaid to Corianne Ashley, and even when she was named Mary McQuaid, she went by the name Christy McQuaid. So, you know, it was like a whole web of different names I was finding, and I put probably 50 to 60 hours of time into this, but and it wasn't just on the internet. I contacted people that know Corianne Ashley, and I contacted people that know Becky Folger in person. And I started releasing names, and I started releasing some pictures. And eventually, Rebecca Roth felt pressure, and she came out with a video that said, I am Corianne Ashley. And she showed some documents that supposedly indicate that she worked for Northwest Airlines. No pictures though. So I still questioned it, whether these documents were fake or real or what have you, because it would have been simple to just show her in a flight attendant uniform.
Kurt, if I can interject here for a second, the reason for the listeners out there, the reason that this is important is Rebecca Roth came and wrote the book called Methodical Illusion, and she went on the talk show circuit, myself included, a couple times, all across alternative media. There's not many, you know, there's a handful of women only that get up and really fight the fight, so to speak, and take on the powers that be. She was one of them. So she inspired, I know, a lot of people in that manner. So almost in a way, she sort of infiltrated, I guess, for lack of better terms, the alternative news media movement, I think, and misrepresented herself. And that's, of course, anytime you're trying to really, the only thing we have is our credibility. Anytime someone comes into your environment like that and that doesn't have credibility, it's damaging to everyone. So that's why it's important, people out there. And Kurt, you can comment on that if you'd like.
Sure. What's important is that she came out. Now, she'll just tell you that she writes fictional books, so her credibility doesn't matter. But that's not true because of what you're saying. You know, when I was an attorney and we had expert witnesses on the stand, before they could ever give a word or say anything, they had to prove their credentials. And Rebecca Roth was not doing that. Not at all. So that's what initially started this. Now, it went in a little different direction, though, once I started getting into it. So, you know, we have her selling these essential oils. We have her, you know, as a realtor under another name. I found these Cabana Talk videos. There are other infomercials she was involved in under another name, Christina Sorensen. And, you know, we have our source saying she's using the name Becky Folger. So, I mean, it's all over the place. So, she portrays herself as this grandmotherly figure, saying she has 5 kids, 7 grandkids. She's given multiple ages, 56, 59, and 64, I think. So I started looking into her family, and I talked to someone in her family. And this person confirmed what I had found, which is that she only has one child. And the person in her family went further and said, not only does she only have one child, they've been estranged from each other. And she basically dropped the child off on the father's doorstep and left town. That's what this person told me. She's also estranged from her 2 siblings, hasn't talked to either one of them in many years, and was estranged from her mother for many years before her mother died. Now, after her mother died, there were a lot of tensions in her family because of her being estranged from her mother for many years. And she, at one, I don't know if I'll say event, but the family was together after the mother passed away. And she, I got this from an eyewitness, she picked up a knife and went after her brother with a knife. And I actually confirmed this. I called the courthouse in Issaquah County, Washington. That's where this took place. And the court clerk confirmed to me that there's an outstanding warrant for her arrest for attacking her brother with a knife. And she skipped out on court and fled the state. So she never actually went to court. What I really wanted was a mugshot.
Kurt, we're at the end of this segment. We'll be back on the other side here on the Common Sense Show.
All right, for this week's Ranger Gear Review, did you know that hackers and government agencies can scan your RFID personal identity details through the air invisibly using an RFID scanner that reads the chips that are increasingly on driver's licenses, passports, and credit cards? Merely by walking near an RFID scanner, which may be hidden, by the way, you can have your personal identity details stolen without your knowledge or consent. My name is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I launched Ranger Gear to be able to offer solutions for problems just like this. We came up with RFID blocking sleeves that interfere with RFID scanning attempts and block them so that no one can steal information off your credit cards, driver's licenses, or passports. You just slip any credit card or passport into one of these sleeves, and it immediately blocks the RFID scanning. It can't get through it. It's like a bulletproof vest against RFID signals. These RFID blocking sleeves are infinitely reusable, they're durable, they're portable, lightweight, almost weigh nothing, and you have to use them now when you travel to protect your identity and your personal security as well. We've got them on sale now, a pack of 10 credit card sleeves and 2 passport protectors. All of them block RFID 100%. They're available now 10% off by using discount code DAVE at rangergear.com. Again, just use coupon code DAVE at rangergear.com and you'll save 10% off this RFID blocking sleeve pack, which contains 10 credit card sleeves and 2 passport protectors. I really can't emphasize this enough. Anywhere that you travel right now, if you have these RFID chips embedded in your cards or passports, you are being scanned and tracked without your knowledge. But you can block that using these RFID blocking sleeves right now. Rangergear.com. Use discount code DAVE to save 10% today.
You know that the leading cause of death, if we had a societal breakdown, and I wrote about this morning in the article I mentioned earlier at thecommonsenseshow.com, the leading cause of death after about 2 weeks will be cholera. Waterborne diseases. Everybody needs to have a water filter. I mean, probably should have more than one per person. Berkey water filters. And where can you get yours? ReadyMadeResources.com. My good friend Bob Griswold has a whole supply, and I'll tell you, they're reasonably priced. It's where I got mine. You can give Bob a call at 1-800-627-3809. Again, that's 1-800-627-3809. You can go up on his website, ReadyMadeResources.com, and look at what he's got available. Where our special guest is Kurt Haskell. And I want to just put a little closure here on where we were at in our last segment and put any of the program directors and our many affiliates mind at ease here. What we talked about here with Rebecca Roth is a matter of public record. It's out there in the public domain. It's in the legal court system. And Kurt, let's talk about your role a little bit as a U.S. attorney, mm-hmm. former U.S. attorney, and why it's okay for us to talk about this and we don't have anything to worry about with defamation.
Well, you can't get sued for defamation if something is true.
Exactly.
So it's part of the court file. I don't think it's in dispute anywhere. I mean, you can call the court yourself and ask them. That's what I did because I got this information. First of all, I got the information from an eyewitness, and then I wanted to double-check it because I had the same concerns. I didn't want to be sued. And the court verified that there is an outstanding warrant for assault. The court hearing was October 21st, 2011, if anyone wants to call the court and ask them. And the defendant is Corianne Ashley-Narani. Okay. That was the name she was using then, and that's the name on the court file.
Very good. You, mm-hmm. you mentioned Monica Gaynor, too. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Monica Gaynor, she engaged me. When my stock started to rise in the literary world, she engaged me on Facebook and engaged me often. And it looked nothing. Her photo, she was a blonde lady, looked nothing like the photos you see of Rebecca Ross. So kind of interesting
right.
how she may have been floating around other photos. Before we close this topic out completely, what we're alluding here to is people who appear to be something and they're not. And this is a major problem for us in the independent media. Our mission is to bring the truth. And Kurt, I wanted to ask you your humble opinion about how common do you think disinfo agents are in our particular brand of journalism?
Well, obviously, the mainstream media is dominated. Now, the alternative media, I would say there are quite a few in the alternative media also. I mean, you're talking about maybe the government approaching these people or, you know, and making some deal with them where they can make some money or whatever. And I think a lot of people would do that. I think a lot of people don't have high character and would jump at something like that. So I think the people that are out there to tell the truth, you know, in good conscience to help people, you know, is a pretty small amount. And I think that, you know, if people were offered some sort of monetary compensation that was high, they would jump at it, a lot of them.
Yeah, I've often said, Kurt, that the hardest thing to do is to do the right thing, and most people don't. Mm-hmm. Most people don't do the right thing, unfortunately. You know, Kurt, we have a situation going on here with a standoff. You're probably well aware of. You're familiar, I'm sure, with what went on at the Bundy Ranch, and now Cliven's sons are there in Oregon,
right?
With a you know, sort of a nationwide, I say nationwide standoff, but it's known nationwide. The story is a nationwide story. What say you about what's going on there, and what do you see as the, you know, the best possible outcome? Let's not talk about the worst possible outcome. What do you see as the best possible outcome with that, Kurt?
Well, it's a really interesting scenario, very interesting, for a couple of reasons. You have the federal government that was humiliated over the Bundy Ranch situation about a year ago. They looked very weak and helpless in the situation. And then you have the same people, the Bundy, three Bundy brothers and the militia, now taking over a federal, not a federal building, but a government building in Oregon and occupying it. Even though the, I think they're called, they're Hammonds? Is that their last name? Hammond? I think.
Yes.
I think it's father and son Hammond, went to prison to serve their sentences. So they're not even part of the dispute, but the Bundys are kind of pushing the issue to the forefront. So you have a federal government that can't afford to look weak again, and you have these militia people that are not going to look weak because they feel they're fighting for the United States Constitution and their country. So you have two immovable forces, in my opinion. So I think it's going to end in bloodshed. I really do. And what it kind of reminds me of, and what I think is going to happen, is something similar to the Waco, Texas biker gang shootout last year. I don't know if you guys followed that event or not. But it was what I believe was an agent provocateur started that, and you have all these police set up to kind of wipe out the biker gangs. I could see something like that, where you have an infiltrator to the militiamen, because they're allowing anyone to go in and out of there, the militiamen, and you don't know who you're letting in. And I could see an infiltrator get in there to do something, whether it's fake or real, to the authorities, where they just unload, or, you know, maybe they stage a death of one of them, they arrest everybody for felony murder, something like that. But I don't see how this ends peacefully in any way. I really don't. I can't even think of a scenario where it would, because you're not going to have the Bundys and the militiamen say, you know, enough is enough, we're stepping down, and you're not going to have the federal government and the BLM look weak a second time, because that will just encourage more and more of these events. So I this is a very interesting scenario to me, and I think it's going to be an explosive one, and I don't think they're going to let it go on very long. I think they're going to take action. So, and I think it's going to end in violence. I hate to say that, but I really do.
You know, I happen to agree with you. I think violence is at hand. But let me ask you a hypothetical question from a former U.S. attorney's point of view. Mm-hmm. If Ammon Bundy and the crew up there that have taken over this federal building, if they decided to lay their arms down and walk off the property and promise to return home, would the government let them, or would the government insist on getting their pound of flesh and arresting them?
No, they won't let them get away. Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
They'll be charged with, you know, a whole long list of felonies, I would think, that'll put them all in prison, you know, for 20-plus years or whatever. Yeah.
Well,
they want to be rid of these Bundy people. Because if they let them go, they know the Bundys will do this again.
You know, I have to give credit to the Bundys. I've met, certainly interviewed Mr. Bundy, Cliven Bundy, when I was in Nevada, and have been on interviews with his son. We're supposed to interview Ammon tonight, as a matter of fact, at 7 p.m. From the compound. We hope that goes through. We hope everything turns out well. But you know, we're seeing a situation here, Kurt, where I think, you know, this is just sort of a representation, I think, of the general population's frustration, you know, with the federal government. I think people are tired of being fleeced, tired of being lied to. They realize that you know, government, generally speaking, is in bed with banks and corporations, and you know, so we're sort of the milk cows. Do you see going forward, Kurt, you know, maybe not necessarily as dramatic as an armed takeover, but do you see more pushback, let's say, from the American people going forward? Now, you're from Costa Rica, but you certainly lived in America for many, many years and can kind of take an outsider's perspective on things from where you're at. But do you see this these happening more and more, these type of events, or the pushback events happening as we go forward?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, the government just is cracking down on people more and more all of the time, taking more rights away. You know, you're paying more and more in taxes and receiving less and less back. You have the media stoking up all this hate between different groups. It's awful. And you have a federal government that doesn't represent the interests of the people. And a rigged, election system. I could go on and on and on. So, yeah, I mean, this is a great example, because you have the defendants in the case willingly going back to prison, but you have this group of militiamen saying, we don't care. This enough is enough, which is interesting, because some people are saying that maybe they picked the wrong fight, to act like this in. You know, maybe there would have been a better situation. But these people are at the end of their rope. They're fed up. They're completely tired of all this, and that's why they're picking this, this incident to stand up, because they've had it. And this sort of thing is going to happen more and more. But I think there's going to be one big spark, and it's going to spread nationwide. Might not necessarily be this event, or it might be. But I think it's going to end up in a civil war type event. I really do.
I agree. I hate to say that.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you, Kurt. I think this is going to be the spark. And this is why, if I were the Obama administration and I were on scene and I was running what was going on in Burns, Oregon right now, the last thing I want to do is create a martyr out of 155 militia members, because that could grow to 15,000 militia members overnight.
Right. But what do they do? See, that's the situation. What do they do to save face and to be rid of these people? That's the question. Exactly. I mean, did they go in like they did to the David Koresh compound in Waco and just burn it all down and everybody dies? You know, no. That's why I think to save face and to get rid of the militiamen, I think they're going to put an agent provocateur in there, and that way they can blame the militiamen for starting an armed conflict. That way they'll get rid of the militiamen, and they won't have the blame on them for starting it like they did with the Branch Davidians in Waco. So I really think that's what's going to happen. I don't see any other way for the government to be rid of them and to save face. I just don't. It's too risky. They'd be risking a civil war. So I think that's what they're going to do.
Kurt, we got about 15 seconds left before we come to the end of this break here. But on the other side of this break, if you don't mind, let's talk about Costa Rica and the process for people out there that may be interested in leaving the United States and moving and being an expat. We can talk about that process on the other side of the break. This is James White from the Common Sense Show, along with my co-host Dave Hodges, and we're with Kurt Haskell. We'll be back after these short messages.
Talking about America's decline, the liars that rule, the impending police state, the collapse of the dollar and the economy, or the loss of electricity due to an EMP? Well, it's just talk. A wise man does more. He prepares. Whatever the trigger or disaster, you cannot depend on your local grocer, the big box store, or any government handouts to feed your family. So reclaim your independence and food freedom by purchasing Liberty.com. Numana food storage meals are individually wrapped and placed in a reusable bucket. Numana meals are delicious. Potato cheese casserole, beans and rice, pancakes, pasta primavera, habanero chili, and more. No MSG, no preservatives, no high fructose corn syrup, no GMOs. Nutritious food to feed your family, friends, and assembly at a very reasonable price. Under $2 a meal. So you can have a better shot at surviving the tough times. With a shelf life of 25 years, it's food insurance and food assurance. You'll need to add the fire in the water. Make the wise choice. Order Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com today. foodforliberty.com.
For this week's Ranger Gear Review, we are literally giving away folding credit card knives for one penny each. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and to take advantage of this offer, just go to freefoldingknife.com. That's freefoldingknife.com, and you'll get this folding credit card knife for just one penny. This isn't some gimmick. This is a real emergency use folding credit card knife with a steel blade, very, very sharp, 65 millimeters in length on the blade, but it folds down like origami to the shape and size of a credit card. This makes it incredibly easy to carry in a pocket or a purse or the glove box of your car and have it ready for emergency use. Normally these are sold for anywhere from $5 to $10, but right now at freefoldingknife.com you can get one of these origami style folding credit card knives for just a penny. Limit one per order, please. So take advantage of it right now at freefoldingknife.com.
You know what the Baltic Dry Index is, often referred to as the BDI? The Baltic Dry Index is the measure of how well, how fast, and what the volume is of goods being shipped around the world. It's much better than the figures the government gives you, because we know the government lies to us about how healthy or unhealthy the economy is. The BDI is at record levels, and it's at record low levels. And those record low levels are sustaining themselves at record low levels. Well, folks, if products aren't moving, and 15% of the farmers are going to be out of the business next year, and I'm working on that story. We're going to be breaking that in about 10 days. Where are you going to get your food? We recommend at Food for Liberty that every American have 2 years of storable food. And that's playing it safe, and I'll tell you, it's cutting it kind of close, too. Where are you going to get your storable food? Tastes great, reasonably priced. foodforliberty.com/Hodges. Again, that's foodforliberty.com/Hodges. Well, we're going to do a U-turn. We were talking during the break, and when you're in this business, in the independent medium, we've all had this happen to us as we've investigated stories. We've been the victims of government interference, government tampering, and Kurt was telling us during the break about what happened to him when he was looking into the Rebecca Roth situation. So I think it's important that the audience gets to see that there's a little bit of risk involved when you do this. Kurt, tell us what you were telling us during the break, please.
Oh, sure. When I was doing my investigation into Rebecca Roth, I pulled up a realty page. She was a realtor back in the late 2000s on the Wayback Machine. The Wayback Machine is a page where you can get screen captures from old pages. So I pulled up her realty page from 2007, and on the front page, the picture had been cut out, which I thought was weird. But I kept digging, looking for a picture of her, because that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted a picture to tie to this name, and I found one. And within 3 seconds of me finding it, a box popped up on my screen, and it said, "The Wayback Machine is now updating this page," and it had the date and the time on it. And poof, the page was gone, and the picture of her was gone within 3 seconds. So what that tells me is that not only was my computer hacked, but I was being monitored in real time to have, you know, parts of my investigation erased. So that was a scary thing to me, because to me the only people that can do that are, you know, involved in the federal government, the NSA, CIA, those type of people. And I had my phone tapped, and you know, I know how to tell when my phone is tapped. There's a beeping that goes on, because I had the same thing happen to me when I was speaking out during the underwear bomber events. My phone was tapped for quite a while. And also the same thing happened with my computer during the underwear bomber event, and in this event where my computer got so slow, I mean, it was like the speed of a turtle for a few days. And that's what happens when the federal government hacks you and they're monitoring you. And it was the same type of things that were happening when I was doing this investigation of Rebecca Roth that happened to me during the underwear bomber case.
You know, this is something that's happened at times, I believe. I know for sure when I was in Nevada with Stuart Rhodes, with the Oath Keepers, when we were doing the Bundy Ranch thing, there's no doubt that they had our phone. They were listening to our conversations, because without going into it too deeply, they reported things on the news next day that we talked about in private, just the four of us, and it was kind of eerie. So yeah, this goes on. But you know, one way to escape the intrusion of the federal government, the United States federal government, is to move, Kurt, and that's what you've done. You've picked up, I imagine, your family with you, and you've moved out of the United States into Costa Rica. So you know, that's a very interesting topic, I think, that a lot of people are interested in, that would be listening to the show. Let's talk about that. This last segment here, we probably got 10 minutes or so left. Let's talk about the process? I mean, I can't believe it's easy. Do you have to, you know, start from the beginning? Do you have to switch bank accounts, get passports, citizenships, apply for visas? I mean, what happens? How much of a process is it? And was it like harder than you thought, or was it maybe easier than you thought?
Okay, it's actually really easy. You can actually just move here and stay. As hard as that is to believe, you have to have a passport though, because what you have to do, when you move here, the Costa Rican government will give you approval to stay here for 90 days, okay, which is fine. But then when your 90 days are up, all you have to do is cross, leave the border, and come back. So what people do is they'll drive up to Nicaragua or to Panama. Those are the two countries that border Costa Rica. Cross over, cross back, and you can stay here another 90 days. So it's very easy as long as your passport continues to be valid in the U.S. Now, you can apply to be a resident here, which would be similar to like having a green card in the U.S. It takes about a year and a half to get that approved. And once you get that approved, then you don't have to leave anymore. You can stay, and you don't have to cross the borders anymore. So no, it's really easy, actually. Costa Rica likes having Americans move here because they generally have more money and help stimulate the economy.
Yeah, I actually looked into Costa Rica at one time myself, and I was I'm a retired college basketball coach, and I had some feelers put out from places like New Zealand, Norway, and Costa Rica, which they have their own pro league down there. And I actually had some discussions with people about coming down there and being employed as a shooting coach. But what I found that was really interesting is when I talked to somebody from the consulate who spoke English as well as I did, they told me that they weren't really interested in having someone with my political views coming into their country.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. But, I mean, you can just move here. I mean, the government doesn't really care. As long as you're not a murderer or something, they're going to let you in. So it's not difficult to move here at all. Not in the slightest.
Talk a little bit about the climate. What's the climate there?
Okay.
If you could compare it to maybe a U.S. state, because I imagine most people listening haven't probably left the United States or very far from the U.S. How would you compare? Is it tropical? Is it warm? Is it mostly warm? A good growing season? Can you talk about that?
Okay, sure. There are several different climates in Costa Rica because we have mountains here. So it varies greatly whether you live in the mountains or you live at sea level. So generally, most of the people live around San Jose, which is in the mountains. San Jose is the capital. And the weather there I would compare to Los Angeles, where it's 75 to 80 degrees year-round. It's actually a little warmer than Los Angeles is in the winter in San Jose. It's really, really nice weather. But the downside is you're not by the ocean. We have oceans on both coasts here. We have the Atlantic on the east coast, and we have the Pacific on the west coast. Now, if you live down at the beach, it's warmer. It's probably, and that's where I live. I live in Jaco Beach on the Pacific Ocean. It's warmer than any city in the United States. I would say the temperature did not get below 70 here the entire year last year, not even at night. Not once. So I would say generally in the day it's around 85 to 90 during the day, except for February through April. That's kind of our hottest time here. And during those months, it's 94 to 100 in the day. And at night, we're usually around 75 degrees. So it's warmer than even like Miami or San Diego, or even Phoenix, because Phoenix gets cold in the winter. We never get cold here, ever. It's very tropical.
Do you find the people in Costa Rica are as apathetic as Americans are towards the political process?
Yeah, I'd say so. They get pretty fed up here, you know, with the government here. Yeah. In different ways, though. You know, it's more like, what do I want to say? They think the government here is, you know, representing themselves to make money. But we don't, you know, but it's different in the U.S. because the U.S. has a military and are starting wars and are, you know, kind of taking advantage
of
their countries.
Kurt, the people in the U.S., the people that serve in the U.S. Congress, and they're in it for money. They're in it to enrich themselves as well. That's not.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
They're on to something, for crying out loud.
No, maybe I didn't explain that well. That's kind of the feeling here. But in the U.S., I don't know. In the U.S., I think it's more of people are fed up with taking rights away, not necessarily just money, but like trying to take your guns away. Here, it's not like that. Here, they don't take your rights away here. It's very amazing how many rights you have here. You know, people like to say the U.S. is the most free country in the world. It can't hold a candle to Costa Rica, honestly. I know Americans don't like to hear that. You really have true freedom here, true freedom. You can do almost anything you want to do at any time if you're not hurting someone else. So it's different. Hopefully I'm explaining that right. The government here is more about stealing money. But in the U.S., it's more about stealing money, raping other countries, taking your God-given rights away, and that sort of thing, all encompassed. But here, it's more specifically just stealing your money.
Now, the government here is about scorched earth these days. Leaving nothing left, no rights left behind. You know,
right.
I read an international study, and it was from Oxfam. And this is probably going back to 2014. And they ranked the civil liberties in various countries, and they said now that the United States has something like the NDAA, which is basically you can be arrested for no reason, no due process is allowed, no legal representation, we ranked 43rd in the world, 43rd in democratic rights.
Yeah, and you know what's really amazing, though, here is that there are so many freedoms here, I don't think most Americans could stand living here. As difficult as that is to believe, because I think most Americans would have an issue with it, with like legalized prostitution that we have here, legalized drugs, no enforcement of drunk driving, things like this, legalized sports gambling or gambling anywhere. This is what I mean by true freedom. No enforcement of traffic laws. The only traffic laws they enforce are speeding and seatbelts. This is real freedom. But
I would submit to you, we have some of those freedoms too. We have prostitutes. They're elected every 2, 4, and 6 years.
Right.
Yeah, right on.
That's true. But you know, another thing would be like how kids are treated here. Kids can do whatever they want, but you know, if you see a 2-year-old running down the street in the U.S. with the mother a block away, someone's going to call CPS. Here, it's not like that. It's kind of kids have their own freedom here too. Maybe it's too hard to explain, you know, without actually seeing it. But I'm trying my best at it. But it's really, really kind of a live and let live attitude that I think most Americans are so not accustomed to that they would have a hard time adjusting to it.
Well, Kurt, we're just out of time here. It kind of snuck up on us. Why don't you give out your websites real quick before we go?
Okay, sure. You can go to my Real Investigations Facebook page to follow my show. You know, if you want to follow me even closer, add my own personal Facebook page, and you can go to my YouTube page too for Real Investigations. And of course, my show airs on Talk Network, 4 o'clock on Mondays, 4 o'clock Eastern on Mondays.
Thanks, Kurt. That's all the time we have here on The Common Sense Show. I'm James White from my co-host, Dave Hodges. We'll see you next time on The Common Sense Show.